You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and professionals in the publishing industry. This week, we are missing our regular co-host. Jason, unfortunately, was called out this week, but we have a special guest host. You might remember seeing her from a few episodes ago. We have J.E. Taylor. How you doing?
Hello. I'm good.
How's the weather on the East Coast?
Still cold. The spring has not come, and we're, almost at Easter, and it's like still 30 degrees with snow on the ground.
See, the beauty of that, though, is you don't even have to dye the Easter eggs now. You could just hide them as is.
That's true.
Yeah, Easter is right around the corner. I can't believe how fast this year is going.
Absolutely. It's like it's already almost the end of March.
I know. Summer will be here before we know it. I can't wait for that.
And then I'll be whining about the heat, so,
Always something to complain about, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's also introduce our guest for this evening. We've got Stina Holmes here.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We are awesome. Tell us a little bit about your books.
So I am a New York Times USA Today bestselling author. I write emotional, impacting books. They're contemporary fiction, women's fiction, and my goal is to kind of, once you're reading, to grab your heart, twist it a little bit, have you cry and come back to me and still like me while you're doing it. So that's always good. A little bit, yeah. I have one coming out in exactly a week on April 1st, Easter weekend, which lovely. So I get to celebrate with cake and chocolate and just my wheelhouse, which is great. It's called The Forgotten Ones. And so far, readers are loving it. They're calling it twisty. So that's good.
Oh, I like that, twisty. Yeah. Now, what got you started in publishing?
My husband. I was working at like an oil and gas job, just reception. And I was kind of, not really doing what I wanted to do. And he challenged me to enter a publishing contest. And I had 6 months to write a book. This was back in 2005. And I knew nothing about writing. And so I tried it. He challenged me, and I hate losing challenges. So I did it and submitted it, and I won. Amazingly enough, because I knew nothing. But that kind of fanned the flame of writing for me. And it took me another 5 years to publish anything else. But then I jumped on the self-publishing bandwagon and just went crazy.
Now, did you go self-publishing first, or did you try the agent query method, slush pile method of trying to reach out to the bigger publishers?
So I did both. I started off self-publishing, and then I went to the e-publisher with erotic romance. And then I decided I wanted to change things up a little bit, so I wrote romance fiction and sent it off to agents. It took about 2 years of writing and rewriting and, querying and all that stuff while I was still self-publishing. And then I didn't hear anything, and I decided that enough was enough, and I loved my book so much, I believed in it so much, that I was just going to self-publish it, even though it was a different genre I wasn't really familiar with of marketing. And it took off within, a month and 2 months. It just went up to like number three on the bestseller list or whatever. And I started getting calls from agents and publishing houses. And then I grabbed an agent, not one who had contacted me, but one I'd had a relationship with, and talked to them a little bit. And she put it out there, and it went to auction and landed Amazon Publishing. And went with them. So now I'm with Lake Union, and I still self-publish at the same time.
That's great. I like that you have the contrast there. You're doing it yourself, but you've also worked through the agent model and shopped out a book to a larger publisher. Now, as far as self-publishing goes versus going the publishing route, which do you prefer?
Don't have a preference for either one. I find there's pros and cons to both. So I love the reach that working with Lake Union gives me when it comes to the marketing on Amazon. on their website and whatnot. I love that. But I love being able to directly focus on my readers when it comes to self-publishing and being able to meet their needs, have more control, and play around and try new things and let things work. And if they don't, then they don't. I've learned from it and I can keep trying new things. And you can't do that when you go with a publisher. So I find there's pros and cons, and I really don't have one over the other. Now, I am writing my last contracted book right now for Lake Union. I owe them another one, but I'm going to be focusing after I hand this one in a week, same day as my book is due, going to be released. It's a lot of fun, but I'm going to start self-publishing a new series that I'm going to focus on. So it'll be fun. I like them both. Does that answer it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, we find a lot of times when we talk to authors, because we talk to everybody on either side of the spectrum, a lot of authors really appreciate doing the hybrid model because they get that element of control over all of the self-published works, but they also do get, like you said, that reach. There's a little bit of clout. There's a little bit of extra reach that comes with going with a publisher that sometimes as an indie, you're just not able to grasp onto.
Right. Yes. And so you're smart if you're a hybrid author. You're smart to take advantage of that and use it to, you know, your own benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, go ahead, Jane.
No, I agree. You know, it's great to have both sides of the house on your table. So go ahead, Kim.
And it's, like I said, something that a lot of authors we've talked to are either going after or they're already doing because they like to have, you know, the flexibility. You know, if I want to publish a series that I want to go quicker to market with, I can do the self-publishing. If I want to try and shop it out to an agent and wait for a big publisher to pick it up, you know, they can do whatever they want to do with it.
I do find one of the cons of being a hybrid author is you have to put a focus on one, right, at a time. One has to, you know, especially if you have a contracted book, then you need to put your focus on that because you have a contract, you have to meet it, right? Where with self-publishing, you can, if you need a little bit of extra time, you can build that in, or you can extend your due dates or your relationship with an editor or cover artist, right? You can be more flexible with that, where with a contract, you can't. So to me, sometimes that's a downfall.
True. But now on the flip side, when you have a contract, usually you're delivering the product, but there's a major gap between delivery and production, correct?
It depends on who you're with.
Okay.
I find Lake Union, there's not that big of a gap.
Okay. All right. Because the last author we talked to had almost 2 years between delivering her contracted book to when it was actually published. So I was going to say that gives you time to actually shift gears again.
Oh, no. No. For me, at least. My book comes out, it's due April 1st, and it'll be released early 2019. So I already know that, you know, I hand it in to her, I'll probably get it back end of May, and then I'll have a month to work on edits and revisions, and I'll send it back, and she'll have it probably for a month. They need at least 6 months from the time it's finished for the post-production. So it's going to be a smaller window for me to get all the rewrites and stuff done. So everything else that I'm working on, when those come back, I have to go push to the side.
Okay. Yeah. So you really do have to compartmentalize, you know, what you're writing, when you're writing it, and meet all those due dates. Okay. Now, as far as what you're writing for contract versus what you're writing for just the fans, do you have a preference over either story? Do you feel passionate about one versus the other?
No, I love both projects, and they excite me at the same time. So I've tried writing two books at a time, and it is so hard because I just want to keep going gung-ho on this one because I'm loving it so much, but I know I need to put the brakes on because I need to start writing on the other one. And then I get excited about that one and I'm loving it, and it's hard to go back and forth.
Yeah, especially when you're writing in a series, you want to stay in the headspace of that character to the end.
I agree.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your public speaking, because I noticed when I looked at your website, you offer classes, online courses to help people with the branding and the marketing of their self-published mm-hmm. book?
I do. So one thing I have really enjoyed throughout this whole process is the branding aspect. I love the concept of it. I love how relatable it can be and how we can use it to reach our readers. And I love that if you can focus on your readers and not your sales, there's only good things on the horizon for you, right? And your sales will usually come when you focus on your readers. But I have found that a lot of authors, whether they're, you know, they have 10 books out, or they're new and just getting started, the idea of branding is difficult. And using things like Instagram when you're just getting started, you know, how do you use it to the best of your abilities to reach your market, right? To find an audience, or blogging, different things like that. So what I've done is I've created a free course for anyone to sign up for. And then I offer paid courses for different aspects of branding that are just short that we can all do. And then I do one-on-one coaching as well to help someone set up a brand or get started on it, help them, you know, discover who they are as an author when it comes to reaching their readers. It's a passion of mine. It's something I love discussing, and I love going for coffee with, and we talk about it all the time and whatnot. Everyone
That's
usually is.
I've noticed with yeah. authors, you get us talking, we'll just keep going and going.
Yeah.
But yeah, branding is a very important topic. And, you know, the whole marketing, I think, is something that's an abstract concept to even some of those seasoned authors, because there's so many avenues out there to take to, you know, get your book out there. And you have to tell people about your book in some way, because no matter what you put into it, if they don't know it exists, no one will buy.
Yeah. And it's so hard because things are so saturated and there's so many options for readers now. And how do you get your book in front of them? It's hard.
Yeah, that's the tough part. You know, knowing where to do it, which avenues are the best, and you know, which ones are you know, just money pits. And
exactly. And then there's also the aspect where, you know, something works for one person, but it doesn't work for everyone. And especially if you're in a different genre, like your friends with, for me, I'm, you know, I write women's fiction. Now I'm going into psychological suspense. My writing group that I hang out with, they're romance or military suspense. What they do for branding or what they do for marketing isn't going to work for me. And what I do isn't going to work for them. And it's, so it's hard. You know, you ask people for help and ideas and suggestions, and then you just realize, like, really, it's a crapshoot, right?
Yeah, it is.
What works for one person, everyone is doing it. And then suddenly the effectiveness is gone and you have to try and think of something else to do. And
yeah. And then you fall into that money sink, you know, yeah. where, you know, is it AMS is the hot thing for ads now, or is it Facebook ads, or is it Twitter ads,
or is it BookBub?
Yeah, exactly. And then you chase that down. Next thing you know, you've spent a couple grand and you're still not seeing the sales that you hoped for.
Yeah.
And then
it may be because you're targeting the wrong groups, per se.
Exactly. You know? And especially if you don't know who your audience is and you don't know who your readers are, then that money is just being wasted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a fine balancing act, and it is a lot of trial and error too. You know, aside from the blogging and making yourself available, you know, on social media, you really do have to fine tune what you're doing in order to reach the right people.
Yeah, and I find it's really crucial to know who you're reaching. Right, you need to know who your audience is and where they are and what they care about, and what's going to work when you're trying to market to them. And if you don't know who that is, you could have the best book and the most amazing cover. But like you said, no one's going to see it because you're marketing to the wrong people.
Right. Or nobody's going to pick it up because it doesn't speak to them, because that's not their genre.
Exactly. Yeah.
So your switch from women's fiction to psychological suspense, what drove that?
Well, that's what I read and it's what I love. It's where I've been taking my readers with me with each book that I write. Mm-hmm. I kind of dipped my toe into it a couple books ago with A Memory Child and I loved it. My readers were happy about it. And then I continued with women's fiction for a bit. I always, I focus on dark issues, but with the soft touch. So, you know, postpartum psychosis, small town school shooting, child sexual abuse, kidnapped children. Like I deal with the tougher issues, but everyone grows, right? As an author and as your brand and your writing. And this is just a natural thing for me to grow into. So I've been taking my readers with me little by little. So this book is The Forgotten Ones that comes out is that bridge that goes from Saving Abby, which was about a mother having to decide between, you know, saving her life or her unborn child, to a real psychological thriller, so which is what I'm working on right now. So this book was a nice bridge, and
readers
are loving it. So it's good. It's good. As long as I can take my readers with me and I don't jump too far too fast, hopefully there will be no backfire.
Yeah, speaking of taking your readers with you, do you have a private reader group that you speak to directly? Do you, sorry, I'm tongue-tying myself. Some authors use Facebook, some authors use Patreon. Do you use any of those?
So I use Facebook, and I have a newsletter for them as well. They're Stina Secret Society. But then I've also worked with some authors, and we created a reader group on Facebook called Readers Coffee House, and it's for women's fiction, suspense, type books. We've grown since it's only been a little over a year, and we now have like 7,000 followers or members in our group, which is fabulous. We all share the same passion for reading and the same type of book. So it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, those are the two main ones that I have.
Now, the other side of that question is, how much time do you put into those groups? Because that's the other side of it. We write, but we also have to have time to market, and that can be a big time sink.
It is, yeah. So the way my brain works is I get most of my marketing, social media stuff done in the morning, and then late afternoon, once I've gotten rid of all that stuff, I'm able to focus on writing. So I go in the morning, and I, with my own, you know, society one, we do daily gratitudes and we talk about what we're reading and whatnot. And so, you know, you spend a little bit of time in there and you respond to people, reply to them and whatnot. And then the Reader's Coffee House Fridays are my days. So I do Friday reads in that group. And so I'm responsible for that day of talking with everyone, and I'll go in during the week and I'll comment and whatnot, but time suck. It's all included in everything else I do. So maybe an hour a day is what I focus on.
Okay.
But it's throughout the day. Yeah. It's manageable. I used to do a lot more, but then I realized that as much as readers want to connect with you and, you know, they love that you're replying to them and talking with them and whatnot, they want your next book more.
Yes. If you develop that rabid fan base, they want the book.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what we're trying to do, is we're trying to develop that rabid fan base that is after the next book and the next book and the next book that we write.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a tightrope that you're walking when it comes to connecting with them and making sure that it's a relatable and a personable relationship that you have with them. That it's more than just, you know, they think that you're just wanting their money so that you know, they buy your next book. If that's all they feel you're doing, then they're not going to be a rabid fan. They're not going to be loyal at all. But if you're honest and you're real and you actually have a connection with them, then you have more of a chance of keeping them.
And that's a statement that's been echoed by many authors that we've brought on the show, is being real with your readers.
Yeah.
And engaging them in a personal way instead of shoving sales at them day in and day out.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. They know. Yeah. Come on. Like, we know when it's getting done to us, right? And we don't like it. Right. So why do we think that we can do it to our readers and not have it ramifications from it?
Absolutely. Yeah. My favorite people to follow are the ones that post just the craziness of their daily life rather than posting about what they do.
Yes.
Yeah, my street team, I asked them what they wanted from me, interactions that they're expecting should be. And I got, you know, it sort of surprised me, you know, that they wanted to know more about my personal life, about, you know, my daily process and things like that. I'm like, oh, okay. So,
yeah. Really? Am I that interesting?
I know. I'm like, I work full time. And then I do this on the side.
I always post about the kids. They're more interesting than me. I have my Monday and Friday Zoe face.
Yeah.
Every time we go to her ballet class, and this is her deal, not mine. I take a picture because I tell her, you know, we're going to send this picture to Daddy so he can see because he misses the ballet classes. And she always makes a crazy face. And it's a different crazy face every time, but it is an insane crazy face. And that's the one she wants me to share.
And it's the most adorable thing in the world.
That is cute. Now, my kids don't want me to tell anyone about them. So I'm not allowed to share posts or photos or tell them anything about their life. So my life is really boring. I sit and I write. Like, I don't know what else they want me to say. So we do daily gratitudes. What are we thankful for? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, a quiet house with no glaring music.
Yes.
Unknown children.
And children's friends.
Yes. Or, you know, not waking up and realizing that someone had a whole sleepover party in their bedroom last night.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But even in that realm, you could post some of like the fails of the day, like as you're editing a paragraph that you've gone over, like, I can't believe I typed this.
Yeah.
And that could be a way to share some of you with your readers, you know, being real with them.
Yeah. I share a lot. They all know I love to travel and I'm a coffee addict and I have lots of coffee mugs. So on Instagram, I'm always showing, you know, my coffee photos, my mugs and, you know, my tired face or whatnot. I've just started doing, I'm only on day two, so we'll see if I can keep it up. Author 365. And so you do like a one. Yeah. So I had the same reaction. So it's a 1 minute video that you post on Instagram and you can then, you know, put it to Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And it's basically, you know, a 1 minute in the day of the life of, right? And this is what my day went. So I got my words or I didn't get my words or, you know, today I just watched movies and I binge watched whatever, or, you know, went out, that kind of thing. We'll see. If it works, we'll see if I can keep it up. We'll see.
I haven't gotten that brave to do videos outside of these things with Katie. So because by the time I get home, mind you, we go from work to the gym. So I get home and I'm grubby and gross. I'm like, there's no way anybody wants to see me like that.
But I bet you they do.
In my bathroom?
No.
That's what I put on at night now because I don't have kids in the house.
There you go. You know, the thing though is, and maybe Stina, you can back me up on this if you have the same type of fear. I can do public speaking. I can talk about subjects to people without a problem. I can do Spilling Ink and it's not a problem. But if you ask me about me, you ask me to talk about myself, I just stutter and trip over my own tongue and I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Oh, no, I'm an open book, which is really bad because I probably tend to say too much about myself. But my husband and I, you know, years ago when we were first married, we were pastors. And so talking about me or anything just comes naturally. And I'm the type of person where I don't like there to be masks and I want to be real. And if being real means I am super grumpy because I've not had my pot of coffee today and I'm about to bite your head off because you're talking about things I can't even think about, then that's what you're going to get.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately.
I can respect that. I can respect that.
Yeah. It's been fun. Yeah. It's different conferences I've talked to or spoken at. There'll be early morning sessions and I'm just like, oh my God. So I'm just warning everyone right now, I have not had that much coffee. So everything that's coming out has no filter.
Now the conference thing, that's usually when you get tripped up. I'm prepared to talk about whatever that panel is. But then when they do the introductions,
I can't
introduce myself well.
No.
I'm like, I word good, I swear, yes. But then when they get the questions going, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I can talk.
You can do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I think that might be normal because I hate doing my own introductions as well. It's, who am I, right? Like, who am I to tell you who I am? Like, I'm like not really anyone, right? That's how I feel. And so having to brag about myself or tell you why I'm so awesome and amazing is not easy.
My one panel, I was on a panel of writing sex and writing sex well. So I'm like, I apparently write sex well. That's why I'm here. It was a very unique experience, you know, and to say that in front of a group of people and outside of, well, I'm somewhat reserved in the business world. So to come out and try to be dynamic and talking about sex at the same time was just such a difficult thing. But apparently I did well.
Good job.
I just haven't had the chance, you know, to go back to a conference because that was the years my kids were teenagers and and no, I'm not taking off to a conference while, you know, they're in their, you know, trauma time.
I think part of it too, though, is as an author, people expect you to be perfect with your words. And there's that little voice in the back of your head that's like, oh, why did I say that? Don't say something stupid. Don't say something stupid that really just throws you off when you go into an event where you have to talk about yourself or your books.
Yeah. Mm. Or I hate when you're writing something on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and you spell it wrong or you miss a word and then everyone is after you. And it's like, hello, this is why I have editors. Exactly. Like, what are you hoping for? You know, what I submit and what comes out is not the same product.
Right.
There's a reason we hire people to help us write. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And that's something I always make sure to let people know of when it comes to indie publishing. Don't skip the editor. Whatever you do, don't skip the editor.
No, even if you think you are amazing. That's right.
No matter how perfect you think you are, don't skip it.
Oh, I know. And you know, as many years as I've been writing, and you guys probably know the same thing, you get into a habit, you start to see some of the mistakes that you've made in the past, you start to correct them. But even, you know, 10 years into it, my editor is still bloodying up every single manuscript I send her. So I know that as much as I've learned, I have way more to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still comma deficient.
Oh, yeah. I will never learn how to use. I'm the Shatner comma expert, by the way.
Oh. I love ellipses. I use them way too much.
I like them too. I do. Yeah. I like them too.
I'm like, what's wrong with them? Why can't I? I think it sounds natural. You can't do those.
Yep.
Well, why not? I do them in everything else. Why can't I do that in my books?
One thing I've changed up over the years, I'm no longer the exclamation point person. Now, in correspondence with other people, I abuse exclamation points all the time. But when it comes to my manuscripts now, I barely ever use an exclamation point.
It's almost like it's ingrained that fear. Yeah. I think I have one or two in the book that I'm writing right now. And I keep thinking, should I just take it out? I'm sure I don't need it. Like, I'm sure they're going to take it out for me anyways. Why don't I just redo it? But I really like that. Like, it really fits. Yeah.
But now when I write an email to somebody, I've got extra exclamation points everywhere.
Yeah. Suck it up. Just handle it.
You know, it's got to come out somewhere.
That's right.
Yes. And it's better just one than three.
I tend to do two, I think. That's my average, two. But then I may do like four or five series of two in an email. I'm really excited about this.
I was reading a book or reading something for a e-zine I'm on, and they had exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point, and I just shuddered. Unfortunately, that story, I was like, nope, pass.
Oh,
oh
dear.
But you have to have them. You have to have your editors. Absolutely.
Yep.
And then, you know, that's the other thing too. A lot of people that go into indie publishing don't always know what's involved in the process. You know, you see a book out there and you think, well, I'm just going to write the book and turn it into, you know, an ebook or a print book, but they don't think about the formatting, the editing, the cover art. They don't think about the multiple passes with proofreaders or beta readers that need to happen before it actually gets out there. They really kind of just think, poof, it's done.
Yes.
And yes, it's and obviously not that. So, Stina, since you do both, what is your process when it comes to doing your self-published works?
So I will write, and I tend to edit while I write. And I always hope to send in a really strong first draft. But it always comes back not strong, but I try. But I have an editor lined up for my self-published books. And I have beta readers that I give it to first. So I'll write it. So I'll give it to them to read. I get them to go through it. And then I'll send it off to my editor. And then when it comes back and everything is done, I send it. I have a bunch of people in my reading group who will proofread for me. Because, you know, there's always those last minute mistakes, right? Doesn't matter how many editors you work with. You're always going to miss something. So I usually have about five proofreaders who will go through it for me, and we'll do it one at a time. And that fifth person may find one or two things, right? Like still, it's crazy. But then once I'm ready, I put it up.
Okay. Do you do any kind of a pre-order setup, any kind of lead-in marketing for it?
Not usually. The new series that I'm going to be doing, no. What I'm going to try and sell it on my website first to my newsletter group, and then I'll put it up wide on all retailers. I'm not a fan of pre-orders, even with my traditional, like my Lake Union books. I want that hype to happen now when the book is published, instead of it happening a month or 2 months or 3 months in advance, because then if it all happens then by the time you come to your release, you have to try and recreate that hype again with all your readers. And I just don't want to have that effort, and I don't want to lose that first impact that I get with them. So I prefer to have it right away without the pre-order.
Okay. Now, one of the things that we've talked about a lot lately on the show is right to market, and then the speed release method for indies has been very, very popular. Do you subscribe to that method where you're releasing within that 90-day window?
No, I don't. But I think that also has to do with my genre and knowing my readers again. So women's fiction readers, contemporary fiction, even psychological suspense, they don't need that rapid fire pace. So they're very loyal, and they'll know if it takes a year, usually, right, for others, they'll wait that year for those books to come out. And I had readers who today, one emailed me and said that on their fridge, she has a countdown for my book release. And I'm like, what? Like, oh my God, no one has ever had that countdown for me. That was awesome. But a lot of my readers are like that. Like they'll wait, and they'll know that I have a book coming out, and they'll be just as loyal for that new book as the other one. And so I don't feel the rush to have that. And it wouldn't work anyways, because I would be rushing my writing and putting out the best possible work that I can. And I don't want to do that to my reader, because for me, that's a promise that I'm breaking to them. If I give them a crapshoot book, there's no reason for them to continue to buy from me, because that's what they're going to expect. I'm not willing to risk that.
Okay. That's a very valid point. And it's nice to see a contrast to what we've been talking about lately with other authors, you know, people who are still willing to take the time with their books and to really develop that reader connection instead of just developing something that the market wants and throwing it out there. So I like that.
Yeah. I'm not after the sales. Like, of course, I'm not going to lie, the sales are nice, right? And that's what I live off of, and that's what I provide for my family with. But ultimately, I want a connection with my reader, because I know if I can connect with them and I have a loyal readership, the sales are going to come. But if all I'm going to do is I'm continually focusing on the sales, I'm losing all my readers, and the sales won't be there. So why would I continue to do that? Now, I have an extensive backlist, and most of us do, unless we're new, right? So instead of focusing on the rapid release and trying to always find new readers, and forgetting about the ones that you have, and you're always just trying to give them new books, what about the fact of, why can't we focus on our backlist? You know, the ones that we spent all that time on, why can't they continue to sell? And why can't we be finding new readers for them, so that while we're writing these next books to come out, these new readers that we found can buy the old ones, right? Like, I feel like we've lost our focus on that. And it's almost like, you know, I just spent so long on writing this book, and I've done a rapid release pattern. That's my schedule. And all the books that I just put out 1, 2, 3, 4 months ago, I've forgotten about, because I'm just focusing on this new one. It just seems counterintuitive, and you're just exhausting yourself, and then you're going to have a meltdown, and you're going to be exhausted, and you're not going to be able to write, but then your whole plan hasn't been sustainable. And so as soon as you stop writing, your sales are going to stop.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. It's like that hamster wheel. Once you get off, that's it. And a lot of people find that, you know, they in the Right to Market group, they have that initial success and that initial burst, but there's that 90-day window cliff that I keep hearing about people falling off of. And if you do fall off of that, rebuilding all of that momentum is just, it's a Herculean task at that point. So why aren't we focusing on it? You know,
why does it have to be, right? Exactly. So if you know you're getting to that 90-day point, then start doing those ads for your other books so that other people are buying them, and then your name and your, you know, everything stays up, instead of thinking that you just have to put out a new book.
Yeah, because if you look at the traditional realm, they still do just about a year between releases, even in series books.
Well, with my Lake Union books, it's a year in between. It used to be, I used to do 2 a year. So every 6 months I'd have one come out, and then it wasn't needed. And I wasn't producing the best ones that I could. I felt like I was always rushing. So we went to a 1 book a year, and it's been fine. And my readers are still there, and my sales are still there. And I've been able to use my indie list to correspond with my Lake Union books. And so in between, like, I'm still having those sales, right? And I'm still writing the novellas that can go with my traditional books, and readers are still loving them. And I'm still meeting their needs, and I'm still finding new readers. So there's no downfall to me not having, you know, 6, 8, 9 books out in a year. But if I have maybe 3 that I focus on, then great. So like this year I have 1 next week that comes out. And then my plan is to do 2 indie books by the end of the year. So I'll have 1 out in the summer, and I'll have 1 out in late fall. And then I'll have 1 out in January. So that's 3 books. That's totally doable, right? And I'm not killing myself, and I'm not taking my focus away from my family and whatnot. And I'm not going to have that burnout. And I'm focusing on my readers doing that, because I'm not just always focusing on writing and then getting tired of it.
And I think that's the big thing that kills us all, is the burnout.
Yeah.
Now, Jane, what do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's good to focus on the backlist to get new readers. That's absolutely, you know, I almost said a brilliant idea. It is, because that's your, you know, your bread and butter of your past. And if you aren't reaching new readers with that, they're not going to go forward through all the, you know, in my case, I have interwoven series. I have 4 or 5 interwoven series that, you know, the characters show up from my original. So you know, it's always fun. And if I could get them back and hooked on that first one, then I have, you know, new readers that can go through, you know, 10 or 12 books, you know, once they get hooked on the characters. So, you know, and that's the one I'm rewriting because it's in Erotica Jail. Oh, so,
I, you know, I agree too, because one of my backlist book series is my absolute favorite. And it was one that didn't get as much love as I had hoped it would. So anytime I can, I try and tell people about that series, because it was, you know, my first love, really. It wasn't my first book I wrote, but it was the one series I connected with so much when I wrote And that's the one I want people really to read. You know, read my other books, obviously. But this one, you know, I felt so passionate about when I wrote it. And you can really feel it in the words. So, that yeah, focusing on the backlist.
Yeah. Like so
that's good advice.
So I just need to clean up my first book and hopefully relaunch it because, you know, and it'll be a 2018 relaunch because I have to relaunch it. I can't use what the original book links are because it's in the Erotica Jail.
do you call it a second edition at that point?
Actually, it's a third edition because the first edition was through Accessica Publishing. So
are they still around?
I don't know. I have no idea, but that was like 2010, this book first came out. So, and then I got the rights back and I republished it in 2013, which was a second edition. And now, you know, I'll have to do the clean version. And it's really hard to do the clean version with the subject matter because it's psychological suspense, paranormal suspense in there as well. So, and the other two books in the series are already tagged as suspense thrillers. But this one got in Erotica Jail because of the subject matter.
That's so frustrating.
Yes.
Yeah, the crackdown on erotica. What prompted that? Does anybody know why all of the sudden erotica has just gotten the scarlet letter? I mean, come on, 50 Shades just dropped their last movie. So how can we be that mad with erotica?
There was a law that was passed in the Senate on trafficking. And it hit all the internet companies. If they're found to help traffickers in any way, shape, or form, they could be sued. So that just passed this past week. Yes. That's why all of this crackdown. That's why Craigslist dropped personals. That's why a few other things, you know, started dropping. So I don't know why Amazon's books are doing that, because that's not, you know, conversations between traffickers and, you know, buyers or buyers of the sex trade, because that's another group that was really hurt because some of the, you know, Las Vegas has legal prostitution, but now those people can't go online. No, not anymore.
Not in Clark County.
Okay. Well, Las Vegas itself.
Nye County, yes. Clark County, no. Yes. Not in Vegas city limits.
Okay. But they can't go online and have online chats to warn each other of people anymore because all the internet providers and the providers doing that are taking those down because of the ramifications of trafficking. So yes, this is rolled now into Amazon. Oh. Oh yeah, I did some research. I'm like, why?
And have you tried contacting them? No.
No, because it's not just my books. It's any erotica, anything labeled with the erotica categories or, you know, the store ranking is not there. They might have their erotica rankings, but not the store. So I have no idea if it's just a sweeping wave of paranoia or what. So.
They always use the sledgehammer approach on anything.
Oh, yes.
Nobody ever tries to pinpoint what to do. They just, okay, that's it. Blanket ban everything. And there we go.
Right. It's the same thing what they're doing with reviewing, right? Lots of authors are looting reviews and reviewers are starting to get frustrated. They're not wanting to review on Amazon anymore because of all the hard work of putting that review up there. And then they lose it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you may know the author. Well, you know, it's an author's job to reach out to their fans and to connect with them. And Facebook and other social media sites are exactly where we go to connect with our fans. So if we are liked by a fan or friended by a fan, that doesn't necessarily mean we know this person. It's an interaction.
Yeah.
Right. It has no bearing on the review that they give.
Absolutely. And it's frustrating. And then they'll leave the, you know, the one star crap reviews that really have nothing to do with your book. You know, I had somebody say, well, I thought this was, you know, I had Saving Grace out there as one of my titles, which was changed. But she said, I thought this was the show. And she gave me a 1-star review because she bought something that she thought was the show that was on, and and it's still out there. So it Amazon, KDP, and how they do things need some work.
It's frustrating.
But they are our ebook overlords. They have the, what is it, 80% of the market share right now when it comes to ebooks?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So you kind of
offered them some advice with the, you know, when I went through the argument with Brave and said, well, you know, here are some, you know, I ripped them apart and then I said, well, here are some things that you can do. And I said, and I'm not just talking from the back seat. And I threw out, I work for the world's most respected company, so I know a little bit about this. So, you know. Forbes just named the company I work for at my day job this year. So, yeah.
Right.
So I sort of gave them a bullet list of here are the things that you could do that could help authors and customers understand things better. I said, it means you're going to have to be a little bit more forthcoming.
Yeah, that won't happen.
And do a little work. But if you want to get to here, as your you know, motto says, these are the things you're going to have to struggle through. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and the biggest complaint is that indies feel like the redheaded stepchildren when it comes to Amazon and ebooks.
I don't necessarily agree on that, on the visibility side. They need to do some work to get the visibility, but I do agree on that, on how they handle us as vendors. You know, that we are customers and vendors, and while they treat their customers like gold, they treat their vendors like crap. And they've got to, it's got to be a balance between the two in order for the, you know, for them to become like a world-class organization, which they're not right now. They just want the share of everything on earth, basically.
They're almost there, aren't they?
Yeah. Bezos wants to rule the world.
Amazon and Google will be our overlords someday, so just be prepared.
Yes.
Google already knows everything about us.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
So does Facebook, apparently.
Yeah, you go and Google something, and next thing you know, Facebook ads are suddenly showing you that thing or similar.
Mm-hmm.
Great, yes. Big brother's watching.
Yep.
But as you have to balance that, too. You know, figuring out, one, where you're selling your books, and two, how you deal with the, you know, the rules that like Amazon will put out for you if you're going to go with them, or if you're going to go wide, dealing with all the different distributors. You have to make the choice and commit to it.
Yeah, you can't go wide and then only publicize Amazon.
Right.
And a lot of people still do that. They don't, the reasoning behind that, I think, is because they don't want to share 15 different links to something.
Right, right. You want that one click, right? You don't want them to have to go to your website to find everything and then click on your book if it's a different vendor. You just want that one click, but
sometimes that website landing page is the best option though, because
yes,
it goes into branding.
Yes, it does.
Speaking of that, I don't know if you guys got the email. I don't know if you guys work with Draft to Digital at all, but they are rolling out some really interesting author tools. And one of them is an author page based off of their books to read links, which are universal links.
Right, which is really interesting and very cool. I love the idea. My only thought is, where's the connection from you to your reader in that? Right, so they're not going on your website. They're going on Draft to Digital's landing page. So it's still about you, but you don't have that connection with them. So what happens if Draft to Digital goes away? Right? Like what happens if things start getting hard and you don't have that option anymore? You've lost all those connections and you've lost that landing page. You've lost those links. You've lost those readers, right? You can't connect with them anymore. So isn't it, as much as I love what they're doing, isn't it better if we keep that for ourselves and do that on our own websites? I realize not everyone can. It bothers me a little bit not to have that connection and to lose to lose that control with my readers.
I think everyone could do it if they wanted to. I mean, if you're talking about cost effectiveness of having a website, you know, so that you have a landing page, you know, a lot of authors that start out and a lot of seasoned authors that just don't want to be bothered with doing a web page use blogs. And you can create various pages within a blog, and that doesn't have to cost you anything, or at the very minimum, it costs you $10 a year for a domain.
Yep.
And you can do exactly that. You can create a landing page for, let's say you do it by series, and you can have all of your links there.
Yep. I think the two top things that every author needs is a website and a newsletter. And without those, then you're focusing on social media as your connection, and that's not always going to be there, right? Like, especially Facebook now, you have to pay so much to have ads or to get anyone to see your posts, and you lose out on that. And it doesn't matter how high of your author page, how many people follow you, if you're doing a boosted post and you're only having, you know, 2,000 of your 12,000 see it, what good is that, right? Why not try and get them all on your website, subscribe to your blog, right? And sign up for your newsletter, and then you have them and you can connect with them.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, with the Facebook thing, with the algorithms that make you pay in order to get people to see them, a lot of authors are shying away now from having official pages or using their official pages to say, hey, join my group, because they know groups are getting more activity now.
Right. But then that will change as well, right? They're doing that now. But for how long? And then what's going to be the next thing?
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And depending on your market, I know one of the authors we talked to said, Instagram, if you're a young adult author, you should be on Instagram, not Facebook, because that's where your young adult market's at. Or Snapchat, which I have yet to try.
But for how long?
Right. I have an Instagram account. I haven't used it. So I'm getting there.
I love Instagram, but it's a slow build compared to everything else I've ever done. I don't snooze Snapchat. That's my kids, and I'll just leave that for them. But my focus, I think you probably figured this out, is really utilizing my website and my newsletter. I found out I've been blogging for years, and I never really focused on it too much. I would do it a little bit here and there. And then I realized I had 21K followers on my blog. Why am I not using that, right? To the best of my ability? Like, why am I focusing on Facebook where I have to pay for everything? Why not do that on my blog? And then, you know, our newsletters, we can do RSS feeds so that it goes out to our subscribers all the time, so that we don't always feel like we're having to do a big newsletter with all our info and all our sales and updates. You could just do a simple blog post for things as well, and then have a big, you know, newsletter for the important things. I just keep thinking about, you know, all these new things that are coming out. How long will it be good for until the algorithms change, right? And then we have to figure out something else.
Yeah, originally, when you started, we had MySpace.
He's so sparkly
on Facebook. And then Facebook lasted a little while longer, but, you know, it's like, okay, you know, picking out the next new Facebook is what we need to do to get, you know, at the leading edge, but you never know.
No. Yeah.
Yep, I hear you. I used to like reading blogs, and I don't read blogs as much as I used to anymore. But I remember, even in the days of, you know, MySpace or the early days of Facebook, back then I had a blog that I would read, or a list of blogs that I would follow, and I would read those.
Yeah, and I used to get them in my emails all the time, mm-hmm. right? And you can just read it when you want to or whatever. I would do the same every morning. That was what I would do. I'd catch up with everyone on blogs and whatnot.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just went through my list that I had of my favorites on my blog. 90% of them are now defunct.
Oh.
So I had to delete them. I'm like, ooh, 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 ooh. And I was like, oh, that's so sad. So all my favorites, I have four now. Not, you know.
I think blogging is changing from when we did it before, right? And I don't think we need to do it like we used to, where, you know, it was like a 500 or 1,000 word and you have to put so much into it, right? I think you could do a blog post that's really simple. You know, hey, I have all these giveaways that's happening over on Goodreads, and you can do that and just post that, and that goes out, right? It could almost be like your Facebook posts, but you do it on your blog instead and have more people see it, where on Facebook you don't.
Yeah, I used to have an active following because I used to do interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with other authors, so...
I miss those early days. That's how I met Wilson, as we were on Coffee Fueled Erotica together.
Ah, yep.
I love the title.
We used to each have our own day to post, and yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, no, I met him through Accessica.
See, and I have to see now if there's still a valid publisher, because recently a lot of publishers have gone under. A lot of the smaller ones are closing up shop in this year, or in the process of beginning to close up shop.
Well, they became a co-op. That's
right.
Why my publishing partner and I, you know, jumped ship and built our own, you know, publishing company together. So, because we met through there, you know. Accessica and Fido. Fido only lasted, what, 6 months? Maybe a year?
They were kind of a blip. Good idea. Yeah. It didn't work. They really had their base in erotica.
Right, exactly. So Jason does sci-fi and I do more paranormal. So we jumped ship and decided to join in and have novel concept publishing. So.
I can't believe how many years have passed. I mean, it seems like, you know, we're talking about stuff that happened years and years ago, but it just still seems like yesterday to me.
Well, it's been 8 years since, you know, I first got my, you know, first publishing contract. I was all excited, you know, and 11 years since I actually sat down and started to write again. And you would be horrified. I have like 50 some books out.
50?
50, yes.
Wow. That's awesome. Wow.
I'm a fast writer.
Yes, absolutely. That's awesome. And you know what? Like I'm jealous of people who can write fast. I wish I could.
I've slowed down as I've gotten older.
I have a girlfriend who, like her most days, she does like 2,500, 3,000 words. And I'm like, I've got 20. And you're at 2,000. Okay.
I set my goal at about 1,000 a day. I'm happy if I can get 1,000. That's a very doable number. And if you think about it, 1,000 words a day, every day, you've got 3 novels written by the end of the year.
Exactly. My goal is 1,000 as well. This book that I'm doing right now, I'm averaging about 2, but that's because it's due in a week and I have no choice. But yeah, if you do 1,000 words a day, every 3 months, you've got a 90,000 word novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you send that off to editing and beta readers and all that. And you can publish 3 books a year on a relatively calm schedule.
Yes. Because honestly, 1,000 words a day isn't that hard.
No. Right? And if you really push yourself, let's say like, have you ever used Write or Die?
No, but I've heard a lot about it.
That's a fun tool. And I used to, especially when you're on a time crunch, when you've got a deadline to meet, I'll pull that up because it ticks you off if you don't write fast enough. And it's good for using for word dumping. And when you're doing like a first draft, you really need to not focus on how good it sounds. You need to get the story out. And it pushes you just to get the story out and make your goal. And I think I've done 1,000 words in half an hour.
Really?
Now, again, these aren't great, perfect words.
Yeah.
But it's getting the story out, which is what you really need, because you can refine later. But getting that idea out there without making yourself self-edit and stop, because that's usually what slows you down.
Yeah. Yep.
Then you can get the concept out better. You can get it out faster. And then you go back and, yeah, you revise it. You make it perfect. You make it sound good. But at least then you've gotten the story out there. It's complete.
I should try that.
Just be warned, when you pause, it will throw things at you. Like it'll like do like a siren sound at you, or it'll delete words off of your screen. Yeah. It forces you to just hurry up and write.
Oh.
I should try that because I have only such a small window, you know, when my brain is functioning at night that, you know, I can write now and then on weekends. So, you know, lately I've been working 10 hour days in the office, and that's an hour to and from on top of that. And then the gym, and then I get home and I'm like, I look at my husband and I kind of hate him for dragging me to the gym. But yeah.
Those are long days.
Yes. And then I sit down to write for
two
or 3 hours. Yeah.
That's dedication. Wow.
Yeah. I keep telling myself 3.5 more years. 3.5 more years, and then I can retire from corporate America and do this for for a living.
I am very thankful that this is something I am able to do now full time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I hated corporate America.
Most of us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hated working corporate. It sucked my soul dry.
Mm-hmm. Know the feeling.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we are just about up for time. So, Stina, is there anything you want to let the audience know before we go? You talked about your new release. Any sales coming up?
I actually have 2 books on sale right now for $1.99. It's Saving Abby and Abby's Journey. Those were my last 2 books that were out. And if they come over to my website, so it's stinaholmes.com, if you sign up for my newsletter, you get a free book. Or you can go to Amazon and buy it for $2.99. So grab it for free if you want. That's probably the best thing. And then, you know, find me on Facebook and find me on Instagram, and just connect.
Awesome. And we will post your links down below in the description so that any of our viewers can easily find you.
Perfect. Thank you.
And Jane, how about you? Anything you want to tell before we go?
No, I just wanted to say to Stina, it's been a pleasure. And, you know, I've got... my newest book, which was supposed to come out in April, is actually out now. It's called Brave, and Katie was one of my beta readers, and
and apparently it's really good.
And I made the mistake of publishing instead of pre-ordering, so it's out now.
Awesome! I'm gonna go check it out.
I enjoyed it. It was very good, and like I said, sign me up for the next beta read.
Absolutely.
And as for Spilling Ink is actually opening up a podcast now. So as of this week, we have 2 episodes up on our channel, which we'll post down in the description below the link to it. We're also going to have a landing page. We're going to have a website where you can go and find out our web link, as well as our YouTube link and the podcast link, all in one place. So expect to see more episodes being migrated over to the podcast, but we're still keeping the videos. And we're also going to be starting more live videos coming up next week. I believe we have a live show. And the following week, I'm actually going to have Jason right here at my house. So we're going to be doing a side-by-side. So it'll be really fun.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. I can't wait for the podcast. I love those.
So excited. So, all right, that's it for this week's episode of Spilling Ink. We hope that you guys enjoyed. Please make sure to subscribe and get those notifications of new shows. Spread the word on social media, and we will be back next week with more authors to introduce you to and more professionals in the publishing industry. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.